Hey everybody, Daniel Gregory. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Perceptive Photographer. I'm re-recording this week's podcast on Sunday night at 9 o'clock at night. You might be asking why, and it's because I read something today on the internet that kind of just drove me crazy, and I had to jump in and re-record something just so I could deal with that anxiety. I told you early on that this podcast, in a lot of ways, was helping me deal with my own photography issues and angst. This is one of those examples of when it really kind of comes home to roost. I had read an article that had something about educating photography and something you should do to make sure that you really create great photographs. And the problem was, it was wrong. And so I've been compiling a list for several months about just little things I'll occasionally read on the web that just drive me crazy because I think they're either misunderstood by the photographic community at large, they're misinterpreted, but they're communicated as these truths out there, and they just drive me a little bit crazy. So I've punted this week's normal topic to next week in favor of this re-recorded podcast so that I can just kind of get this out of my system and talk about a couple of these things that drive me crazy. I actually have five this week. The first thing is your first 1,000, 10,000 images are your worst. I hate that phrase. I hate that concept. I hate that notion. It comes probably from Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours. But the fact is, as an artist, there are things that happen organically. There are things that happen without your understanding. And you might make some of the absolute most amazing photographs you will ever make in your life in the first 10,000. They will be accidents. You may not fully understand why they work. You may not be able to easily be able to process why they happen, but they will still be amazing photographs because you are seeing things in an interesting way. Your subconscious, the way it processes information, is going to create amazing imagery all the time. So to say that, oh, your first 10,000 are throwaway is just a complete misunderstanding of the creative process and how it works. You are always in the position to create amazing photographs. You're always in a position to find and experience something in life to create and capture an amazing moment. So you definitely want to realize, don't throw away the first 10,000 or 1,000 or whatever you read. There is always going to be something of value every time you're behind the camera. You may actually have some of your best photographs happen when you least suspect it. The second thing was that we go to the brightest spot in an image. That is not entirely accurate. How we should teach that and how we should explain that is that you go to the point of highest contrast first in an image, which is oftentimes the brightest spot. However, if you pick up Michael Kenna's work from Japan, which is basically benches and picket fences and barbed wire fences and trees in the snow in Japan, you will go to the fence first or the park bench first or the tree first, even though the tree is black against this kind of creamy white snow. If you went to the brightest thing first, you would look at the snow. You go to the point of highest contrast, which in this case happens to be a shadow or dark detail. Because the image is so overwhelmingly white, we go to that black point first. I think that's important for you to remember because if you're in a situation where you've got an entirely backlit scene, your eye is going to go to not the brightest part of the photograph, but that point of highest contrast. So it's a subtle shift in how we speak and teach and talk about photography, but I think it's an important one when you identify why your eye is drawn to something, because we do go to that point of highest contrast first and we go to points of sharpness. So knowing that it's a point of contrast that you're drawn to, because that contrast might be color related. If you think about a Mark Rothko painting, you are drawn to the complementary contrast of colors. Jay Mazel's photography has a lot of that in it as well, where those complementary colors are what draw your eye in. It's the contrast between the colors, not necessarily the brightest point of the photograph. The third thing is that a black and white photograph has to have a black point and a white point, a true black and a true white. Now, this kind of comes from the Ansel Adams teaching back in the day of creating a photographic print. And I would mostly agree when you're starting out and you're learning how to print and you're seeing in black and white, that that is a very important skill to learn. But I think it is a disservice to black and white photography to say that you have to have a black or you have to have a white. You could have maybe starting at middle gray to bright highlights and just have a very high key image that's stunningly beautiful. Minor White talks about how we will create a black. We will create a deep black, even if a black doesn't exist, to create that contrast range. So you don't have to necessarily create a perfect contrast range. When you go into Lightroom, you don't have to find a perfect black point and a perfect white point. If you're in Photoshop, you don't have to create a white point and a black point. If you don't know what those are, you haven't learned the skill yet. But if you understand how black and white photography works and you have a vision and an intention that doesn't involve a black or a pure white, don't do it. You can have amazingly stunning work that involves those subtle midtones or high key images. The fourth thing is get it right in the camera. Don't fix it in post. That's actually pretty sage advice, except if your vision requires you to do it in post. If you're an HDR photographer, you're shooting a panorama, you're a compositing photographer, you actually have to finish it and fix it in post. There is no way to get some of those images just in a single shot of the camera if that's not how your vision is. What the intention behind that is not to get sloppy behind the camera and be like, oh, I'll just use content aware fill and take out that tree branch, or I'll fix the shadow, I'll try to fix the lighting in post. It's learning to see is what is actually under that skill. What fix it in post means is that you didn't take the time to see and vision behind the camera. However, if what you're seeing requires you to have significant post-production, you are going to have to quote-unquote fix it in post. So I think it does a disservice to a huge number of photographers who see the world a certain way and rely heavily on that post-production because of the surrealist nature in which they see their photographs or the way they identify the world, or they're going to composite things together. There would be no way to do it in the camera. Don't use that as an excuse, like I said, to be lazy and only use Photoshop to fix things that you should have done behind the camera. But don't discount a photographer who uses a lot of post-production to create their images because that's the way they see the world or that's the way they experience the world. I think that's an important distinction we need to make, that too often times we don't dive in and spend enough time thinking about the person's work, how they see and how they talk about their work to decide if that is a skill that they have, that they're using that post-production to create something or not. There's amazing things you can do in Photoshop. There's amazing things you can do in some of these post-production tools. And if that's about the vision, that should be celebrated. The last thing is I sometimes hear from people about how their work is organic, and so they don't spend a lot of time studying because they don't want to be corrupted by having knowledge. That is a load of crap. And there is no other way to say that. If you're a writer, you read a lot. Writers don't be like, oh, I can't read because that might increase my vocabulary and help me tell better stories. No, I don't ever read. All the writers I know are massive consumers of literature. They read all the time. The greatest photographers look at the visual arts all the time. They study. You need to understand design and color and light and composition so that you understand what makes a good photograph, what doesn't make a good photograph, why certain photographs work, why certain photographs don't. And if you're not taking the time to actually do that studying, it becomes extremely difficult to actually help you grow as a photographer. Because one of the things I hear over and over again is, well, I just don't know what makes a good photograph. Well, that's because you haven't taken the time to actually figure out what actually makes a good photograph. There are certain things within photographs that resonate with us. What resonates for one person may not resonate for another. So there's not like this, oh my gosh, set of guidelines that produce the perfect photograph. But you should be able to understand your own design aesthetic, your own sense of composition, your own sense of light and shadow and color relationships to identify photographs that are meaningful. When you look at a photograph and you know that it's meaningful to you, you know it resonates with you, and you look at another photograph and you know it doesn't resonate with you, that is within whatever is contained within the frame, which is design, composition, light, structure, framing, expression, gesture. Those things you have to understand in order for you to really identify what makes meaningful photography. So to say that not studying makes you a better photographer, I just don't buy it. I think you really have to take the time to dive into your own work, understand your own work, understand the work of others, because that's how we grow, share, and create more meaningful work. I know I normally don't like to rant in my podcast for a lot of reasons, But in this case, I just could not get past that notion of the contrast. And that really just kind of stuck with me all day. I felt like I had to get a few things off my chest. Spending the day alone in the dark room, I was working on some wet plate chemistry, so I was breathing some ether. So that may be causing part of the problem. Who knows? I appreciate you listening to me rant. I hope it was a little bit insightful. I hope I've given you at least a little interest in maybe ranting on your own. It feels pretty good to get it off my chest. I also want to give a quick shout out. I have two really good friends, RC Concepcion and Mia McCormick, who worked for the Kelby One Corporation, and they were let go and they restructured Kelby back in February. And Mia and RC, along with their friend Kevin, have recreated the site Photo Promos, which used to be a place you could get the big deal. But RC and Mia are going to really focus in on creating some amazing educational content there. I'm hoping to go down to Florida and actually record some classes with them and really kind of dive into some of the elements of photography that I'm interested in and work with the Photo Promos people on that. But I just want to give a shout out to them and say I'm so excited for their venture. I'm so excited for the things they're doing. I can't wait to see what they come up with because I know it's going to be absolutely amazing. They're both gifted and talented instructors. I think that'll be a pretty amazing experience. Don't forget, you can always find us up on the website at www.theperceptivephotographer.com, or you can always find us up on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you happen to download your podcast from. And we're about a month away from Photoshop World. So if you're still on the fence about that, I would love to see you out there. I've got my four classes I'll be teaching there, and I'll be bounding around with my camera. So maybe we can get together and shoot if you're going to be down there. I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you next time.